piece, but there's an absurdity about the whole thing too. Like you're, I mean, because the biggest infractors or the biggest
People who do
people like the biggest threats to the art. Okay, we're kids, number one. I remember myself touching art and my dad freaking out on me in a gallery and like, but like, you know, nice like old ladies and often sort of the very young or the older people who, you know, wanted to get close because their eyesight or the kids, they want to touch it or, and it's, you just feel like you're there and you're like trying to control the, you're there to control the crowds and it's just funny to, you know, you're an authority in that situation. You have to, you know, use your authoritative tone with most often some nice little old lady or,
excuse me,
not to sound condescending or anything, but it's just kind of an absurd, you got to be nice about it. Diplomacy is very important in that setting. And then you have the other extreme, working at the Musée d'Art Contemporain, where you have an exhibit, say, of several wooden chairs like the one you're sitting on, set up in a row, like sort of mimicking a audience space, like where an empty audience space, and you know, like chairs that maybe were probably bought from, I don't know, some clearance sale, Leon's dump, I don't know. And this is like, but you still, people are not to sit on it, people are not to touch it. Of course, I mean, it makes sense. Why, you don't want to disrupt the, but it's just, this so absurd, just that having that kind of a job.
Yeah,
that's one of the things I like about the gallery, where people come and they look and they because they're dealing with the gallery, they are no quote-unquote rules of engagement.
Exactly.
And
there are rules. The boundaries. Yeah.
And at which point I say, no, this is a gallery. You can touch it. Just be nice.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's cool. And that's, I guess, the whole thing. That's the thing with public. I mean, you're inviting.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to sort of question those boundaries or break them down. Not that museums don't have a place and there isn't a... But it's different. It's just the space. It's just bringing into value the notion of space and how it's dependent on. Oh God, I'm not expressing this very well. How the space informs the work itself and vice versa. You know, it's like.
That's one of my favorite things is where I can come upon something in a museum and then have a sense of discovery. And it's like one that I can always remember is, it was Marcel Duchamp's The Rape of Lucretia, I think it was, where it's in the Philadelphia Museum or some museum down there. And basically what it is, it's you walk into a room and then you have this wooden door which has a... much more peephole, which has light streaming out.
Yeah.
And at which point, Dan is like, oh, okay, so this is modern art.
This is
contemporary. Oh, there's the light. Whoa, cool. And then something drew me closer, and I looked in, and there's this whole diorama that's life-size of this woman getting raped, I think.
Yeah.
And at which point I said, whoa, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then in discussion with my friend Ted, who lived in Philadelphia at the time, he was saying, oh, that's phenomenal, because it's when he had gone, had been on a school tour, and there was this whole lineup of people wanting to look, and so there was no sense of discovery.
Yeah.
You knew exactly where to go.
Mm, right.
And so, yeah, when I go into a museum, I'm always pushing boundaries. Okay, so how close can I get?
Well, yeah, you're exactly. I mean, I guess you're questioning, I mean, it puts the museum people in a tight spot, or the security guys, you know? It's like, that's why I can appreciate both sides of the argument in my case right now. But like you said, I mean, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be questioning just because you understand where they're coming from. You also have to push those boundaries a little if we want to. I mean, this sounds if we want to. I mean, that's the way life works. It changes things. Conditions change, people change, and therefore you know, laws and et cetera should change accordingly. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so that's a little off topic, but
no problem.
Yeah, the one other, and I think the last one that I really had was the original article in the Gazette back in October, which I missed just because at that point the Gazette, Gazette is still saying no, we're not allowing you to read stuff and so on online.
Okay, right. They have a it's up for like a day and then it's
well, it's there. It's they publish probably about 50, 60 articles a day.
Right.
Five of them will be available to anybody.
Oh, I see.
And then the rest are under lock and key.
Put back into the archives.
Yeah. How did Cha track you down? How did you know him from back?
Well, I did. I've known Cha actually for a long time. Okay. But he did a story on a band that I was playing in for the Gazette.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met him that. Well, I'd met him before that even. I'd gone to parties that he's had, and you know, Cha, he's like a, he's a fixture, he's like a, and a nice guy, you know, just generally like approachable, you know, and he had been interested apparently, but he had no idea. I mean, I wasn't very open about it. My friends knew, but I, you know, I wasn't really bragging or talking about what I was up to, and but he, I guess, was interested. He having lived in the neighborhoods where I've been active, he was talking, you know, word of mouth. He was talking to somebody in a bar, and they said, "Oh yeah, I know who does that," or whatever. And he'd also been coming into where I work, the restaurant that I work in, and I served him a couple times, so he knew where I was. So he just came to my work and was like, "Are you the guy that?" Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah. The rest.
Okay.
And so yeah, he wrote that article, and the rest is history, I guess. Or
no,
it's just the present, not history. History.
It is coming up. And then as I normally finish up any interview, are there any questions you would like me to ask that I haven't asked?
Not particularly.
Okay.
If you're happy, I mean.
Any questions you want to ask of me?
Oh God, lots of questions. I think I asked you a few already, but let's see. That's a very good question. Well, yeah, I would like to know. I guess I'd like to know, and this is maybe off topic, but how would you? How would you? Oh boy, it's harder being the interviewer than the interviewee. I realized that I didn't have time to prepare my questions. Well, I guess what I'm wondering is how would you take something that was originally intended for public viewing or sort of without having gone through the authorized required channels, how would you translate that in a museum setting, for example, like your own, like a gallery setting?
This is not a museum setting.
Yeah, a gallery setting.
There are, to my mind...
An indoor setting, private,
the
owned.
Three ways.
Yeah.
One is straight archival. In terms of, I'd love to just borrow, copy, see that disc that the cops have made of all the evidence against you. If you are at liberty to share.
I don't know if that's public domain, but that'll have to talk to my
lawyer. But there, just take stuff like that, whether it's just,
yeah.
I got the list here of this is probably the most comprehensive list in existence of all the stencils you've done. Say, okay, bam, this is one of each. Then saying, okay, then because you did multiples, is there any sort of way of getting copies of every single damn zipper and showing the variations on that, and just whether it's straight photography. Archival, and then, okay, so let's go back and recreate the situation, film it, slap it onto a video, put a video display up. Have stencils, have whether it's the original cans, spray cans, the original cans of paint, and so on, but something that just gives a historical overview. A second way would be to transform the gallery into something approaching an outside setting, whether it's painting the floor black, putting some lines down, and then incorporating in something along those lines. That would probably be You want to answer?
Well, not really. No, okay. I'm not going to answer it. I'll just keep going.
Okay. That would probably be the most difficult, just because it would be bam. However, as a background for an archival exhibit, would effectively help, and just sort of just putting people in a frame of mind and realize, okay, no, this isn't the street. But, and then the one that just occurred to me over the weekend would be, given the way that you take a situation and transform it, is then to then say, okay, this is the gallery. How would you transform it?
Yeah, well,
and at which point, not having any straight affiliation or any link to the actual pieces that you've done, but just say, bam, but that to me is once...
Yeah, that's not keeping to the theme.
No, it's not keeping to... It's not that it's not keeping to the theme, but it is once a career, once a name has been established, whether it's like Picasso, he started off straight, very realistic
there's
painting.
A good comparison.
And at which point then, as time progressed, he then said, bam, I'm doing this. Then suddenly sculptures. Then suddenly, what about fountains? Then, okay, it's he's got the name over
there.
He had no experience.
Kind of, it's almost a marketing sort of. That's what galleries. Well, I guess I'm. Know why I'm uncomfortable with that. So I have to kind of. It's another thing I have to look at. Why I'm uncomfortable with something. I'm not. I am, and I'm not. But just the whole sort of marketing side.
Well, there one thing. And here, would you like another beer?
I'll check the time. I'm okay. I'm cool. Yeah, check the time. I'd like to know.
I do want to. Gallery runs on beer.
Although, yeah, I say that, but you know, I'm not. At the same time, I'm not. There is a creative side to marketing.
Yeah. What time do you have to be at work?
That's interesting. I have to be at work for about 5:30.
Okay, it's 4:45 now.
Okay, I'll have to leave. Yeah, I should leave around 5:15. Or
there, Gus. As I was saying, it's there once a career has been established. Now just put temptation in your way.
It's funny how this notion of career has even come up, considering
that
whole thing was done in such a... was, in a way, it was so liberatingly and blissfully free of any kind of career mentality, which is what I had been sort of preoccupied with before in other aspects. I was just sort of hung up on these notions of career, and
you can still shuck it off.
Yeah,
but
no, I know. I'm just saying, it's just funny.
That is why one thing I would say, why you were so, leery and uncertain as to where and what, is that without any fixed goal, without any fixed idea, saying, but this is what it is.
Yeah, no.
And
kind of
at which point, okay, and not to say where do we go from here. And you're, from my perspective, is you're still in that sensation in that space of. Where do I go from here?
Yeah.
Given that you are much more reflective than I am, you're saying, okay, I can go down this path, I can go down this path.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's that path. Then
tyranny
later,
of choice.
There are
the tyranny of options. And
there are five other paths, and you're saying, okay, right now I'm still in the collection of what are the possibilities.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Then, whereas to me, it's, I like the Yogi Berra line. When you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Take all of it. Take it all. I want it all.
Not necessarily take it.
Is that what you mean? Yeah.
Just, you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Just take it.
And I have to make a decision.
Yeah, right. Well, you're right. Well, you have no choice, really. I mean,
you can stop.
Yeah,
you can stop at the fork.
You can stop and stay there
forever.
Just
say, left or right.
Yeah, that's true. No, you're right. You're right. You're going to learn that way. It's a little more, I guess, not as. Again, that goes back to. It's funny, it goes back to boundaries. Like, I was brazen enough to do what I've done, but it's funny, I'm like, it's like I'm brazen in some ways and cautious in others.
Well,
it's
no, but it is
it's a funny
slow,
contradiction.
It is, I see a...
Now that it's here, you know, I'm like, this is kind of...
It
this
is
my
a slow, gradual acceptance, and it's the first time, certainly you can remember the first time you went on a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
My guess would be... scared shitless.
Exactly.
And at which point, okay, so the first time, no, I didn't die.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right, that was second time, it gets easier, third time.
Yeah.
And then you're off to the races, and it is where in
as we're
positing ourselves as sort of direct opposites, it is the sort of thing where there are certain times where I will just put my foot down and say no, and at which point it doesn't matter. You're much more open than I am. I will just for irrational reasons shut things down and say no, I don't want to go there, I don't want to think about it, I don't want to do it, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, right.
And at which point there's no way that a team
of wild horses
they can't bring
you
in.
Are you Sagittarius?
No, Capricorn.
Capricorn, ah. I'm in Sagittarius,
okay.
But we're supposed to be stubborn, apparently.
I would say, yes, you're stubborn in your own way.
But, yeah, perhaps. But I guess everyone, it's also a question of, I mean, talk about morality, like this big word. What is it in this big tome? And, I mean, I think it's a personal thing on so many levels. Mm-hmm. Your own, you know, feeling what is right and what is wrong for you and what... And,
and to me, it's adding in a certain amount of respect, because what is right for me doesn't necessarily mean it's right for you.
Right.
But
which is where the law comes in.
And a whole lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
But it is then recognizing, okay, so fine. You don't have to join me in guzzling beer, and at which point you might have a different fuel.
Yeah.
That's fine, no problem.
Yeah.
And say, okay.
No, that's it. I mean, I mean, fuck, we have to, I mean, if you're not open to different, I think that, I guess, is the underlying, like, some kind of,
okay, and then, now I do have one more follow-up question.
Okay.
Given that brought up the idea of goals and careers as an artist and stuff, off the top of your head, A, do you see yourself having a career as a visual artist, and B, as part of that, where would you like to go with it if that is the case?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's... I've always tried to engineer my life or design my life so that I have as much time to be creative and as possible or do the things that I enjoy doing as much as possible. I think a lot of people, everyone's like that, and that's kind of the carrot we're chasing, you know, like this, that dangling carrot. We feel like if we just work, you know, like working towards this sort of dream that we all have, you know, and waiting that someday it's gonna hit, and someday, you know, I'm gonna get my shit together, so it's hard. Like this whole, I mean, like I said, I didn't really think of it necessarily as a career, although it's definitely something I feel I have some talent in, and I feel that it's definitely enjoyable. And sure, if I can make money doing it and not working in a restaurant, although not that working in a restaurant is so terrible, I like where I work, but, or just maybe take some days off here and there, by all means, I'd love a career. By the same, I mean, it's weird. I sometimes feel this whole thing. I mean, I'm being called an artist, and I've adopted it. That's great, and I'm flattered, and yeah, I have art. It's just funny. I sometimes feel like, you know, I'd be discovered for the fraud.
You call me an authority figure in art.
Yeah.
And I say, no, I never took an art history course in my life.
Yeah, right.
Up until I opened the gallery, did not know.
But there's a design. What? Right.
And there's my take is where it's up until probably, what, about 15, 20 years ago, I was always taking the idea that, yeah, similar, you want to get a job so that your free time can be done however you want. And so
exactly.
I made a conscious choice.
Or if your job is work that you enjoy, like
that was, no, I'd always said there were three
the
things.
Ideal dream for me.
There were two things that I did not, that I had a passion for, baseball and music.
Why do you say baseball sucks all the time?
We don't have the team.
You're talking about
the
Expos.
Yes. Yeah, so
okay.
And so I had
Robbie Clark, I think his name is. Anyway, he did a film.
Oh, yes.
Robbie
Hart.
Robbie Hart, that's it.
No, I went to high school with him.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yes, he was a grade ahead of me. His brother is Corey Hart.
Oh, his brother's Corey
Hart.
Yeah,
Robbie Hart was two grades ahead of me. Corey Hart was one grade ahead of me. And at which point,
Corey Hart's his brother.
Yes.
I didn't know that. That's funny. No, because I was neighbors with him for a long time, and he, I don't know. You just brought up baseball.
Yeah.
He's like the number one Expo fan.
And they're a bunch of number one.
Katie Hines, we did this film, is number one in certain people's books.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And so for the longest time, I was saying consciously, I will not work in baseball. I will not work in music. And then, due to circumstance, ended up working in the music business and suddenly realized that any job is going to have these real petty things that are annoying and frustrating.
Exactly.
If you have a passion for what you
don't do a career in it.
No, that was my initial idea. But if you have a passion for it, those petty difficulties are much easier to deal with. And
right.
If you're just in it for the money, then at which point, those petty difficulties become mountains.
Yeah, exactly.
And there, it's now the gallery to me. I didn't have any interest in an art, but it is, being able to sit around, drink beer with friends.
Exactly,
At which point, I can put up with it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, March is rent. I still haven't figured out yet, but
exactly.
I'll figure out something for that because, I'm just having way too much fun doing this.
Well, that's it. And, I mean, there's something revolutionary in a way about that decision in a sense. I mean, maybe revolutionary is too big of a word, but it's not the norm. Like a lot of people, and we're sort of conditioned to thinking in these along these lines. It's like career, how to get the best career, so that you can, it's all about security and I guess I don't know. I mean, I view it as a privilege. I had the privilege growing up to be exposed to art and given, the ability to take piano lessons and have, that. So I guess it's been a privilege, but nobody's really immune. I mean, there's always pressures to be a productive member of society and whatever all those things mean to you. And but I mean, I think in some people who, in my opinion, there's people who want to be productive members of society so badly, and they're causing more damage than good.
It's also depending on how you define productive members of society.
Exactly. Well, that's again very subjective, but it's like, I don't know, some people would be better off just sleeping in all day, I think. The world would be a better place,
I
mean,
I never thought
we think that, like laziness is the ultimate crime and or laziness, I mean, it definitely has its pitfalls, which I've been victim to, but I don't know. I don't think this rabid kind of desire to get ahead and make money and get more power is necessarily is any better than being lazy,
But
different spectrum, So that this whole project for me was sort of stepping outside of that whole that pressure, so to speak, that I think everyone sort of subconsciously feels or is somehow, there's manipulations, we're constantly, I was anyway, constantly feeling that pressure, and I don't know where it's coming from. I mean, definitely probably has cultural and maybe family issues and who knows, but although I have to say my family has always been extremely pretty cool, parents, I'm not one of these, I didn't have a rough childhood. I had a pretty good childhood. I've always, I can't use that argument that my, I had a terrible, horrible.
Well, you can make it up.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But, so, I don't know, where was I going with that? It was just sort of, this whole project for me was very liberating in the sense that I was sort of stepping outside of that,
also
that beaten path or that sort of
just because it was by doing it you were donning a mask of anonymity. It's one of the things I remember is I took a workshop in improv theater at which point did this whole thing with masks, and one of the eye-opening experiences was putting on the mask and suddenly realizing because there were mirrors there and they were focusing me in on it, it was, oh, this is somebody else, this is different. And by being able, the nature of the project is such, no, you couldn't get your name out. You couldn't be signed, I'm the one who did it, I'm the one who did it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is having that cloak of almost invisibility, which is very, very liberating.
Yeah, exactly. It is liberating, and I kind of regret that I was as sloppy as I was, in a sense. Like, and there's something very powerful, I think, about that anonymity for yourself, but also for the public. Like, the second that an identity is revealed or something, it's like you're limiting it all of a sudden. It's like it's been defined. It's like Peter Gibson is the guy that does this. Like, I know that guy, or you know, looky.
I'm like, and it's interesting in terms you talk about, but using the project as a response and sort of questioning of the urban values.
Yeah.
However, enjoying the anonymity, you then go back to a rural situation.
Yeah, you wouldn't have that anonymity.
Yeah.
You're right. No, that is contradictory, and but yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
You're totally right. There is an anonymity about living in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because there are so many people. And yeah, exactly. You're in a small town. Everybody knows everybody else. And it's only a matter of time before it's like, oh yeah, Peter down the street's been defacing our... But, I mean, Montreal, that's a great thing about Montreal for me. Having come from Toronto, that's what I'm comparing it to, is it's a city. It's a big city. And there are a lot of things I love about cities. I mean, they're meccas for cultural exchange, and like there's just stuff happening. And but I think we can have those qualities without necessarily we can be smarter about. I mean, because in a sense, this is the experiment of this is human. The city is the epitome of the human experiment to a certain extent. Like how close we can be together, and how much proximity we can be to each other in a sane. I mean, we should try and make it as sane an experience as possible, because it has repercussions for our, you know, our place in the world, and so like a city is a. That's why for me it's like Montreal. Let's. I'm a little vexed by some of these tendencies of some cities to always trying to be, you know, trying to be something that they aren't, you know? Like, let's celebrate what is great about the city and good about the city, and I guess that's open to
everybody.
It's very subjective,
everybody has their own interpretation.
So, you know, I guess I was trying to give my two cents, but... Yeah, you said that cities are anonymous, and back to the anonymity factor. Yeah, there's something powerful in a way. I was thinking, you know, the whole mystery, and people come up to me and they're like, "Oh, you were the guy that was doing that," or, you know, I've been getting that a lot recently. You know, when I go out,
thinking before it all broke, did you ever get somebody coming up to you and saying, "Do you know who is?"
Actually, no.
Okay.
Never did. I kind of, like, fantasized about that happening. But it never actually happened. But people, when they're like, "Oh, I heard that you were the guy," or whatever, and they're like, "I thought the city was doing that."
Yeah, that freaked me out.
Like,
hearing all people saying the city was doing it?
So,
that never occurred to me.
I know.
Hello.
I know. I found that very surprising, but also, it just... There's something powerful about leaving that interpretation open. It's not defined. It's not like, oh, it's that guy, and these are his views, and these are, and it's kind of like, it provided some kind of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It provided like an open sort of vessel for people to imagine what they wanted, what they would about it.
Yeah.
You
I
know,
imagine,
like,
I
it's open to interpretation.
I would imagine lots of people did come up to you and make suggestions for future stencils.
Oh yeah, I had people coming up to me wanting to like just want to part to come out with me and like help me and be you know. And
yeah, for future reference, if you want to keep something secret,
don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
No, I realize that. Don't tell a soul. Not even. No, I. But again, I'm human and. You know,
so secrets aren't the greatest things in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's also maybe, I guess I'm wary of maybe a danger to keep of the secret element, because you are sort of withholding something to a certain extent, and there's something there's a dishonesty,
clear communication,
and I'm not a good liar, and I've tried to lie. Actually, people have come up to me and said, "Are you the one?" And I'd be like, "No, it wasn't me." And then I just did it so badly and lied so that it just left this weird feeling between me and that person, and they didn't think it. They just thought this guy is strange. it just creates. So yeah, I don't know. There's something liberating in the fact. I mean, it's, I hope it's. Yeah, I don't know. It's just in a way of like coming out, so to speak.
Did you ever take somebody's suggestion?
Coming out of the closet.
Did you ever take somebody's suggestion as to an idea for a stencil and use it?
No, but I did take, a friend had sort of, that's very hard. It's really hard to credit influences sometimes because they
I'm not looking for credit.
No, I know you're not. But not specifically, no. Nothing in particular. Although people have given me ideas and I thought they were great.
Okay.
And I have thought, yeah, I would like to do that. But a friend, like, for example, with that last suit, he had mentioned, oh, you should do some, like, made something, with something coming out of the sewer like that. And I was like, yeah, that's a wick. I mean, I'd sort of been thinking along those lines, and it just came from, you know, attaching that shackles thing, like, bringing. But, yeah, I mean, people have given me great ideas. I mean, most people have probably better ideas than I do. And in often cases I'm like, yeah, that is a great idea. I wish I had thought of that or something. But most of them I came up with, well, what has really come up on your own? Yeah, most of them I came up with on my own, although everything influences you. It's hard to really find.
At some point when we start knocking the show together, I will sit you down with a list and be asking you from the beginning of thought to actual conception for each one. It will be very tedious.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I apologize in advance.
Well, I mean, that's going to be probably a good exercise for me because I'm still sort of trying to, disappointingly, I think, to some people like interviewing me, I'm not fully, I don't have a very defined answer necessarily for each of the pieces. Like, so people are like, you know, the security camera, why'd you do that? And obviously, the first thing I think that comes to most people's mind is that Big Brother kind of, and yeah, that played into the.
Although I was disappointed.
That decision.
That was where I noticed you were sort of going a little bit off track. Was initially the security cameras were all in places where there were security cameras.
Yeah.
And so I planted myself. Okay, where the fuck is it? Where?
And they weren't all. They weren't all, but some.
When they started.
What?
When they started.
Yeah.
The one right across the street. I know where the
security camera
is.
But it comes back to, I mean, for me, the argument was, it's like, okay, we are exposed to this imagery. We are being watched, surveilled to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And we accept it on a certain level. And I'm not saying there isn't some value even. I mean, well, surveillance, okay, you can argue there's protection of people and, you know, I don't know.
That's what police do and, you know, they are ostensibly there to protect us, right?
Yeah, but they don't follow you around all day.
But it goes back to that questioning of authority. It's like, okay, if you can look at me, why shouldn't I be able to look? We're looking at you, too.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like, if you can say something to me, why shouldn't I be able to respond?
Yeah.
Or at least question,
mm-hmm.
question that. So that's kind of the idea, like, of a security camera,
mm-hmm.
answer, like, looking right back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it didn't really have the. It's like, well, we're, you know, we are, apparently Big Brother is there ostensibly to protect us. But we have to look at Big Brother.
ostensibly. He went there as ostensibly.
I mean, that's kind of a cliche sort of, I felt that was a little, you're right, it wasn't one of the stronger ones for
me also
personally.
It was
a little
to me
cliche.
Way too big as well.
Yeah.
Should have made the stencil smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I said, it's sticking it in, at least the way that I got introduced to it, it was at places where there were security cameras. And then afterwards, I started noticing, oh, this one's why I can't find the damn security camera.
Right. Yeah. Some of them, well, like I said, it wasn't as thought out as I would like it to have been. I've had
just
thoughts.
You're just a rookie artist.
Yes. No, that's it. Well, that's it. And a lot of the thrill is going out with a stencil, and there's a certain, that's sort of, there's a level of improvisation. Mm-hmm. It's like, where can I place this? Mm-hmm. Like, where can this fit? You know, and you know, sometimes those considerations aren't necessarily as deeply thought out as it could be.
Yeah, nice. See, there I'd always be thinking, where does this go first?
Mm-hmm.
And then, or this is a spot for something.
Mm-hmm.
What is appropriate there?
Yeah.
And then,
well, that would be a more sophisticated sort of level.
Yeah.
And
I'd be a different artist.
Yeah.
I can't stay.
Well, no,
the same,
no, but no, you're right. And I that would be really cool,
mm-hmm.
you know? And people have asked me a lot, like, why did you, is there a reason for
mm-hmm.
your that? And in some cases there were,
mm-hmm.
but it was also kind of a, you know, there's little logistical reasons,
yes,
as well, and all kinds of.
And it's like with the last who's coming out of the sewers, I would have thought a monster's hand, but then trying to think.
Well, that's exactly what my friend had suggested to me. Yeah, exactly.
How do you stencil a monster's hand so that it's recognizable?
Yeah, well, it could be done for sure. Anything can be done.
If you know, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it could totally be done. And that was the exact suggestion of my friend, and that's kind of where I sort of got that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that is sort of like a suggestion of sort of, you know, like sort of underground elements. We refer to it underground is, it's, I don't know what that definition has been sort of perverted and distorted, but for me it's like something that is independent of the system to
mm-hmm.
a certain extent, whatever you mean by that, the system. That's kind of a general term, but so it's like the underground is sort of engaged in that, like, it's gonna snag you,
yeah,
you know, like come and join the underground, or like the underground is laying traps, you know, to the
given that Lucci calls me the cowboy, having the last suit is very, very nice.
yeah, well, that's it. I mean, you have your own kind of
mm-hmm.
maybe why you like it, you
yeah.
know. A lot of people, everyone seems to like a different one for
mm-hmm.
and for me that's cool, but
mm-hmm.
it's also like, that's why it's almost, I hesitate to actually limit it with a specific definition.
No,
for what mine,
your definition does not stop theirs,
mm-hmm.
their definition
mm-hmm.
does not stop yours,
mm-hmm.
the multiplicity of ideas is what makes it wonderful.
Exactly. And that is, I guess that's what art is,
mm-hmm.
in a way. It's there's a dialogue, there's
mm-hmm.
An ambiguity. It's not so.
I prefer the
non-multisyllabic
words, as I've said. It's art makes you think.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good. We need to exercise that part of our brain because
yeah,
it's what's going to keep us sane and
mm-hmm.
and I don't know. I guess.
Mm-hmm. Probably gonna be late for work.
Yeah,
you gotta check, or you gotta leave it over.
I'm gonna leave it.
No problem. Best New Year's resolution I ever made. You can leave beer over.
Yeah, I gotta make some new resolutions. I'm constantly evaluating those
mm-hmm.
those resolutions. But it's nice talking with
yes.
you.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. So we'll stay in touch.
Yeah.
And,
no, as I told you, it's. Emailed New York Times, NPR, Guardian.
What's that?
Oh, I've in terms of just
uh-huh.
further promotional push.
Oh boy, this is the part that scares me in a way, because you know, why am I doing this in the first place? Is it? I mean, hey, I love the attention.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be lying if I wasn't. You know. Maybe I'm just an attention monger. I don't know what that...
Everybody likes attention.
Or at least validation of what you've done. You know, it's like, okay, well, I'm not so crazy after all. I'm not a fucking... I'm not a freak. But, so that... It feels good.
Uh-huh.
But I'm also, I guess, wary about this whole... pursuing it aggressively, in a sense, just because...
I'm pursuing it aggressively... You don't have to say yes. I'll keep
right.
you up to date as to who
I know,
I am.
Like I said, I'm
I give good quote.
You give, right, good quote.
Good quote, yes.
Meaning, what does that mean?
If somebody has wants one quote in 15 seconds,
then... Oh, you have sound bites.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
like the master of sound. Well, this is what I'm saying. I would just hope that, you know, those sound bites would reflect maybe what we've talked about and, you know...
Oh, have I?
No.
My viewpoint, which is different than yours, because...
If you're
going to
be giving sound bites on my behalf.
No.
If they're going to be on your own behalf, that's fine.
You have the freedom to say whatever the hell you want.
Then, actually, that
would come down to the crux.
But if you're like, Peter is like this...
No, have you ever felt that I've been giving quotes on your behalf?
No, actually, not really. No,
okay.
I haven't. Not so far. I don't... No, you're an independent being.
It's there. If NPR or The Guardian comes back and says, yes, it's cool. Can you put us in touch with Peter? Bam.
Okay, right. Okay.
It's up to you to say whether you want to or not.
Okay, good. Fair enough. I guess I'm wary of it just because I'm interested in trying to be creative and living a wholesome I'm a pretty wholesome guy when it comes down to it. I mean,
you're much more well-grounded than I am.
But
I'm very flat.
But I am susceptible to, you know, I still have an ego, and I guess I'm wary of it a little bit, and all these things, all this attention, interest demands a response. And
no,
I want to
no,
be
no.
Well, no, it doesn't. You're right. It doesn't demand a response. But if
I
choose to respond to it, I'd like to respond to it thoughtfully. And that takes time.
Mm-hmm.
That takes time, and that takes...
Understand that just because I send, I do.
Mm-hmm.
You can say no.
Mm-hmm.
It is not that I am saying you must.
Mm-hmm.
Never, ever is. I'm assuming...
No, right.
There's the assumption of
it's
my
It's
kind of
like when you hand me a cigarette. I'm not blaming you. I accept responsibility, but as I was saying before, it's more my wariness is of myself more than it is of you. I'm susceptible to want to take what is given to me, which isn't always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'd get more worried if you're saying, "Can I?" when it's not offered. If it's offered, take freely.
Right.
If it is not offered, and you're saying, "I need,"
right.
There is a larger difference.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's it, I guess. Well, hey. Well, then I guess I'll accept from that for now, or accept what I will feel like accepting.
You don't have to say.
Okay. All right.
Tomorrow's
cool.
Another day.
Cool. All right. Cool.
You gotta get to work.
Yeah. Exactly.
Thank you
well
again.
Well said. Hopefully, I can. I think I'm just going through a period of hyper analysis of self.
You also want a copy of the hotel, fresh off
the
press.
Cool. Thanks. Wicked.